The Gemara Amar Rav Simi Barashi, Rav Simi Barashi said, "V'chilufa l'mesis," and the opposite applies to a mesis. Now we have to explain exactly what we're referring to. What is the opposite? Basically, it seems to imply that what we've learned over here, with regard to machzirin, so we'll soon see whether it's limited just to the idea of machzirin. Or it includes other things as well. Dechsev, lo sachmo v'lo sachasa alav. Because it says that you can't have any mercy. You can't protect him, techase, to cover. Rav Kahana, Masni, Rav Kahana learns, michi harog targeno. Alright, so it's a machlokas as to where exactly you learn it from, but they both agree on the idea. All right. I'm in Sanhedrin. Paragid Aleph. Halacha Hey. Hamesis ain dinav kishar dinin afashos. Whoever is singing, please. The mesis, his judgment, is not like other cases of dinin afashos. Mechamnin lo esa edim. What does that mean? It means entrapment. How does entrapment work? It's the only case where entrapment is permitted in halacha. You're not allowed to utilize entrapment. So let's explain what we mean by the idea of entrapment. Did anybody look in Hilchos Avodas Chachamim, Perek Hamishi, in the fifth chapter, Halacha Gemel, that's three, says, "Be'ein ha-mesis tzarech hasra." A mesis does not require hasra. As we've learned, that's a requirement of the giving of capital punishment, that the individual has to have hasra. And we saw that it's very very specific. It has to be the whole process of hasra. It has to be immediately before the deed, and there has to be what we call kabbalas hasra, that the criminal has to acknowledge it, to accept it. Afal pikan, in spite of this, I'm going to do it. So without hasra, you don't have any case. However, the mesis is different. I mean, which in itself poses a question, because on a simple level, there's a question one can ask. If you have to differentiate between shogeg and mesis. And on a simplistic level, if that's the case, so then why should there be an exception with regard to mesis? Because no matter how serious the crime is, the issue of shogeg, we're not saying over here that if a person is mesis for shogeg. Let's ask that question. What if somebody's mesis for shogeg? Is it because we don't care whether he's mesis for shogeg or mesid? So therefore, obviously, you don't require hasra, or no? Well, is whether it's possible to have a phenomenon of mesis for shogeg. It seems to me that it is. And the question I would ask is it possible to have someone who's Oved Avodah Zarah, who worships idols, b'shogeg? Alright? You probably say that it's obvious, because it would seem to me that this concept of shogeg could apply to any of the mitzvot of the Torah. All it means to say is that the person did it without knowledge. Kilo chola am b'shgaga. He didn't know that it was prohibited. Now you may say, but that's crazy. How could a person not know? Well, that's irrelevant. How could a person not know? If a person didn't know that the Torah prohibits idolatry, so had he known, he wouldn't have done it. But he didn't think there's anything wrong with it. In his own mind, he didn't think there's anything wrong with it. Now, isn't it possible that Demasis didn't know that there's anything wrong with this? But he didn't know that it was prohibited. Maybe he thought that there's nothing wrong with idolatry. Maybe he knew that idolatry is prohibited, but he didn't know that you're not allowed to seduce somebody else. He didn't know that was an avera. You said, how could a person not know that that's an avera? It's possible that a person doesn't know it's an avera. There's a lot of things out there. There are many people that think that what we call lashon hara, gossiping about others, they don't regard it necessarily as being a sin, they just regard it as being a bad thing. It's not nice. Well, for example, for example, to ignore somebody else's aveda, lost object. That's a violation of the Torah. Now, I'm sure many people don't know that, even Jews. I'm talking about Jews. They may think it's a nice, you're a good person, if you return the lost object. They may think that it's not nice to just bypass it and ignore it. But to say that you're actually violating a law, it's educated people that go to yeshiva, know that that's a mitzvah, that it's a command, it's not an optional phenomenon. But the average individual who's not familiar would look at that as, like American society looks at these kinds of things. You can't say that there's a law that I'm obligated to pick up somebody else's object and strive to return it. That's how the average person would look at it. They would say that's a high level. A person that does that is a very nice person. So I'm saying over here, it's possible to say that this person doesn't know that it's prohibited to persuade. Well, look in American law. Is there a concept of persuasion in American law? That's a good law. You have the concept of conspiracy. Interestingly enough, in halacha, you don't have the concept of conspiracy. That is, in American law, if you plan a bombing or a killing, a bank robbery, whatever it is, if you're involved in the actual planning and putting it together, even though you're not there for the commission, you're considered to be an accessory, and you can even get the death penalty. That's how American law works. But according to halacha, you could not get the death penalty because you didn't do the actual killing. Only the killer would be liable to the death penalty. That's not to say that these people would be allowed to go free. That's a different issue. But in terms of what we're talking about, the strict punishments for averos, he would not be liable to that. To commit a crime, it's not clear to me what category that would fall into in American law. That is to say, you're not involved in the planning of the crime. You speak to someone and you convince them. You're a psychopath, whatever. You don't really care. You yourself don't commit the crime. You're not involved in the planning, and you get no benefit out of it. You persuade someone to enter into organized crime and commit a crime, whatever the case may be. I'm not sure what category that would fall into, because that would not render you an accessory. You follow what I'm saying? Am I wrong about swaying someone in general terms to embrace a life of crime? I don't think that would be, that's too vague, that's too indirect. But that's also too vague and indirect it would be a prohibition in Yadis, because if you persuade someone that he shouldn't keep the Torah, that's a mesis, even in a general way. To dissuade the person from keeping the Torah, that's the chait of mesis. Even though the case we're talking about is specifically a case of Avodah Zarah. But the case that we're talking about, two things. First of all, it's specifically a case of Avodah Zarah. And secondly, it's not just in a general way. You're trying to get him into a particular action. If you go through the cases that the Rambam brings down, where you're actually prompting him to join together with you and to be involved in Avodah Zarah. It's not just in an abstract kind of a way. All I'm saying is that, let's say, the person upon apprehension claims that he did not know that such a thing was prohibited by the Torah. That's an avera. Now, maybe he didn't know Avodah Zarah was an avera either. Maybe he did, but maybe he didn't know that I'm not allowed to persuade others. I'm not allowed to do it myself. But there's no sin persuading others. Why? Because each person chooses by himself. He doesn't have to listen to me. Maybe he thought that he doesn't have to listen to me. Raised that the Torah says that he does it by seser, secretly. And doing it secretly would appear that he knows it's prohibited. Otherwise, why would he take pains to do it secretly? That's a good point. But that's different. That's the pasuk. You can't derive all the laws from the pasuk. The pasuk always discusses things in the situation which is prevalent. For example, Mechashefa, Los Chaya, as we learned last week, the only case where Beis Din violates a Los Asay, if they fail to execute the criminal, is by the Mechashef. The Rambam says Mechashef, someone who practices magic, which is a form of Avodah Zarah. Now, does it matter whether it's a male or a female? No, but the Torah says Mechashefa, and the female, it's a female witch. The answer is because the Torah states it in a manner which is representative of the normal situation. In general, those who practice witchcraft were women. So that's why the Torah, when it makes a stand against it, is going to take the stand against that which is the most prevalent form. But the aver is the aver. It doesn't matter in terms of whether it's done by a man or a woman. Here too, the in general, people that are maces are those who want to destroy the Jewish people, that want to break down the Torah. By seducing others into Averet. As we see, it's the most serious crime in the entire system. It's considered to be worse than murder. And the treatment, the manner in which that person is treated, is much, much more harsh. However, you do see, in spite of all of everything, that the person has to get a trial, mishpat. You can't just go and kill the person. There's mishpat. So, therefore, it seems to me that, well, let me, before I give you my opinion, let me put the question to you. How do you understand the meaning of this idea that without Asura, even without Asura, we kill him? What about my question? Does that mean that even if it's Peshogeg? And it's definitely possible that it's Peshogeg. Any aver in the Torah, you could say it's Peshogeg. It's quite possible the person didn't know. As I said, I mean, it doesn't mean the person's on a high level. Let's say the person's not on a high level, but it's actually true. He did not know that this was a specific prohibition. He's an ignoramus. Obviously he's an ignoramus. Well, not necessarily an ignoramus. I mean, a person would be a mesis. Evil intentions, of course. I would say differently. Of course, this requires further study, but I would say differently, and that is to say that all the onshim of the Torah, all the punishments of the Torah, are based upon the fact that the person committed the avera amazing, with intent, with willfully, knowing that it was prohibited, spitefully, and so forth. However, if a person committed it b'shogeg, that's a different issue. That's a completely different phenomenon, where the person did it in a state of ignorance. That requires a karban, a sacrifice. The person has to bring a karban. The person requires an atonement. But the atonement over there is because of the ignorance, the state of ignorance. That this is something which is serious, and the person can't just live his life in a state of ignorance. And something of that degree of importance, the person should have obtained knowledge. So the person does bear guilt. It's not to say that it would just be obviously, a person commits major damage in ignorance. That's a defect that requires correction. But it's not the same as doing it willfully. That's a different category. And the executions of the Torah for doing it willfully, as we say in the pasuk, that all the Jews, you know, yishmu v'yiru v'lo yizid anod. It's the idea by capital punishment when you punish the person. So people, one of the elements is that the people should hear. People should instill a certain fear v'lo yizid anod. And they won't act willfully. I would say, however, that as we learned, requires hasra. And the reason given is because it's supposed to be mafra. Of course, the other side says that he doesn't require hasra. It means that this is all the... When we say that a person requires Asura, we set such a very, very high standard. And you see that there's technical requirements that govern Asura. It has to be within Tov Kedei Dibur, and it has to, even if people yelled out, but he didn't acknowledge it, and so on and so forth. We said that it's... From a purely practical standpoint, it's pretty obvious to everybody that he knew what he was doing. If everybody was yelling at him, and he didn't acknowledge it. So clearly, this too is an aspect of the case which is rooted in the element of mercy, that we raise a very, very high standard. It has to be achieved. It has to be objectified. The fact that this person did it b'meisa, it has to be objectified in a very, very demanding kind of a way. However, that's not to say that that's the only way that you would know that the person did it b'meisa. That doesn't make any sense. It's pretty obvious that Beis Din can establish that he was acting b'meisa. But it's a restraint upon Beis Din. That Beis Din, in order, in a legal, it's one thing to say, I know the person is doing it b'meisa. It's another thing to establish it in the legal context. That's the requirement of Hasra. You see? That's a tremendous benefit, so to speak, for the criminal. That is, we don't regard him as being mazed unless it's established on this degree of objectification. It has to be objectified. That is a benefit for the individual. That is to say that any individual, even though he committed a crime, is still deserving of this type of a consideration, except for the maces. The maces doesn't require us law. However, it seems to me that that doesn't mean to say that if he was truly a shogeg, if he truly didn't know, then he's not really a maces. A maces is someone that does it willfully, knowingly. So how do we know? We know from other Besdin. Besdin will make the determination on the basis of other evidence. They'll investigate the case and they'll establish to the best of their ability whether this person was a mazen or not. But it doesn't have to be through the mechanism of Asra, because Asra is a legal phenomenon that's been established, because generally speaking it's like all the other things that it's part of the whole phenomenon of Rachmanis that he's entitled to because he's a Jew and we want to try and save his life. We don't want to just destroy him. But by a maces, that's not the case. A maces is not because lo sachmo velo sachasa is a very strong point. That's why he doesn't require hasra. But I would say that he does require, it's required to know that he is a maces, that he did it willfully. But if he didn't do it willfully, he was stupid. He should have, you think it's logical. Yeah, logical maybe. It's not logical. He didn't think what he was doing. He didn't realize that this is a serious thing. He didn't realize that that's a category of the Torah. That he's actually violating the Torah, its command, in seducing others. And then I would say, if that's the case, it was clear to the Beis Din that he really didn't know, so then he wouldn't be subject to the punishment. Okay? As far as that, it's really both. That Hasra partakes of the desire to exonerate the individual. So you're making it more difficult. But the substance of Hasra has to, you can't just throw in requirements that have no bearing. There is a necessity to establish whether the person is b'meizid or b'shogeg. Right? So therefore, there's different degrees, there's different ways in which it can be established. By demanding that it be established through the mechanism of Asra with all the technicalities, it's a tremendous protection for the person. But then this said so that he's entitled to it. Whatever, the Torah decided that each Jew is entitled to this type of protection, that his life should not be taken unless it's been established with this degree of objectification that it's been amazing. But if the person is involved in this activity of maces, so then he's treated differently. Pali echad, if he said to one person. So this is the illustration of machamnin, of the entrapment. So what's a person supposed to do? The victim, so to speak, the target. Hu omer, so then he should say to him, yeshli chaverim rotzim b'kach, that I have friends that are interested in what you're saying. Umarim olav. And he's supposed to trick him. Supposed to trick him to set up a situation. Achi yasis bifnei shnayim, until the person will do his seduction, his be a maces in front of two. Kedei lahargo, in order to kill him, because that's the objective. But the objective, so then just go and shoot him. No, I mean, in order to kill him means it has to be done through the appropriate system, procedures, with mishpat. Ketzid machminin lo, how do we entrap him? Hamusas may be shnayim. The musas brings two. Umamidan v'makom afel, and places them in a dark place. You know, behind the curtain or whatever it is. So obviously, so the maces can't see them. Kadesha yiru hamaces, so that they will see the maces. V'yishmu dvarav, and they'll hear what he says. V'lo yira osam, and he won't see them. V'hu omer lamaces, and then when this is the setup, you know, he's got his friends set up, hiding in the wings somewhere. And then the maces comes back, and now they're conversing. He says to the maces, "Emor ma shamarta li biyichud. Tell me what you said to me privately. Let me say it again." And he says to him, "The musas meishivo," and the musas responds, "Heichna niach et elokeinu shebashamayim v'nelech v'navod es eitzim v'yasavarim." How can we do this? It's interesting that now he's supposed to engage in a debate with him. How can we abandon God and go and worship stone and wood? Im chazar, oshasak patar. If he, even he is given an opportunity to recant. But this is not equivalent, but this is, the Rambam just said, it's not hasra. But he is given an opportunity to recant. And also you see from this, that in this particular case, it's clear that he's being told that this is prohibited. So if he recants, or he's silent, that's it, so then he's pater. Well, he's pater because he only did it in front of one person. So, you know, again, you're not waving edus. You have to have edus over here. Because there's mishpat. He's supposed to be, he can only be killed through mishpat. V'yim amalo, and if the maces says to him, kachi chovaseinu, that's our obligation. We have to do this. V'kachi ofelonu, that is to worship idols. Or it's very good for us. Ha'omdim sham berachok mevi'enoso lebezdin. Then those who are in the wings, those who are watching, unbeknownst to the maces, they bring him to bezdin v'soklenoso, and he's subject to skila. Now back to the Rambam in Sanhedrin in Yud Aleph Halacha Hey, where he said mechamdin lo ha'edim. We entrap, we prepare the witnesses to trap him. V'eino tzarech hasra kishar hane'eragin. And he doesn't require hasra, as other people who are liable to the death penalty. And if he went out of Bezdin innocent, the Amar Echad Yeshli Lil Modolov Chova. And somebody says that he can show that the person is guilty. Machzimenoso. That's the Chilufa. The exact opposite. Machzirinoso. Yotza chayiv. Let's say we bring him back. If he's found innocent, then someone has an argument for guilt, we bring him back. Yotza chayiv, if he went out guilty, the Amar Echad Yeshli Lumodolov Schus, and somebody said, I could prove to you that he's innocent. Ein machzirinoso. We don't bring him back. That's even, I think, more troubling, more difficult to justify, logically, on the basis of what we learned in the Gemara. We ain't telling in Lamesis, and no one's permitted to argue defensively for the Mesis. Umoshivin Bedino Zakein Vesaris. Now that's, in general, in cases of capital punishment, there's certain limitations on who's permitted to be the judge, the Dayan. As people who are exceedingly old, or people who have, whatever, are regarded to be more stern, less sympathetic, less compassionate. Not because we're looking to free the person through the emotions of compassion. That would be a mistake. I mean, you could raise that question. They're all supposed to be judges who judge in accordance with their knowledge. They're not supposed to be people who just follow their emotions. But nevertheless, in these cases, there are certain person that didn't have children, person that didn't have, that doesn't have the tzar gidol banim, so to speak. The pain of raising children. People who are judged to be less emotionally inclined are not permitted to sit, not because the people who are sitting there are just going to have this emotional desire to free him. They can't operate, they have to give a psak in accordance with halacha. even if they feel terrible about it, even if they feel they want to let him free, but they know that according to the halacha, he's really guilty, they're obligated to find him guilty. You know, that's the distorting mishpat. You know how the distorting mishpat to say. It just means to say that what? Anybody? How does emotion play a role in the legal process over here? Excluded because they're very old, or because of the thesaurus. A person like that, that's in general, maybe he's less sympathetic. Are perfectly qualified to be dayanim, our judges, just that when, and they do sit on the Sanhedrin, but not in cases of capital punishment, for this reason. But the question is, how does it work? How does the element of compassion play a role? If it's really a process of discovering what the truth is.
Because
compassionate judge doing? When his turn comes to offer a verdict, is he faced with a conflict? In terms of his knowledge, he knows that this person is guilty because the crime that he committed carries the death penalty, but emotionally he feels that he wants to save him. So what are we saying? That he should follow his emotions?
No, he'll be looking. He'll
actually do that. That's the distortion of a mishpat.
Be more open to both.
It means to say that the Dayan always has to make his determination in terms of his knowledge. So, but the point is that the person has committed an action. So now there is there's chusim and there's a chov. There's an argument for innocence, there's argument for guilty. Well, not every case, sometimes it's clear cut. But the objective is to do your best. Where should the energy be focused? Is a person simply indifferent? Is that the correct attitude? Indifferent? It's just a theoretical question. Sometimes you're involved in an area of study, and you're trying to work out a Gemara. It's indifferent to you what the outcome is. It's just a matter of theoretical interest. Now, it's the same thing over here with regard to the question. Okay, we have the facts. This is what the deed was. What's the deed? Should we regard it the same way? We're indifferent to the result. We're just going to try and work it out to the best of our knowledge. It's an intellectual exercise. That's one way of looking at it. Or no, really we have a certain predisposition. We're hoping to be able to discover a schus. So we're going to strain ourselves to do the utmost to discover a schus, if there is any schus out there in terms of the mind, in terms of knowledge. It would be, for example, you have a scientist in a lab. So a scientist in a lab is trying to solve a problem. So the person could be totally indifferent to trying to find an antidote to a certain type of venom. So it's a matter of complete indifference. It's just a scientific project. And let's say, for example, you have two scientists of equal intellectual ability. And you're trying to find a cure for a certain disease. And one scientist has no stake, personal stake involved. Or one doctor. And the other one has a relative, whatever, that's suffering from this disease. So who's going to be more apt, assuming that they're both of equal ability? Who's going to put more energy, more drive into the discovery, to be able to discover the cure? It's clearly the one that, it's not just a matter of intellectual curiosity and interest, but all the person's emotions are pushing him in that direction. However, the person is not going to make the decision on the basis of the emotion. The emotion to save won't determine the course of treatment, because any doctor knows that you can't decide that with your emotions. The emotions have a role to play, and the mind has a role to play. This is the proper ordering of how the emotions of compassion should be the impetus, provide the impetus for the individual to search, to put in the greatest possible effort towards searching for some way to see that this person may not be guilty according to halacha, but it's got to be an honest search. If the emotion goes over the boundary line and starts to distort the mind, then it's false, then it's not good, then it's a serious error. So, in general, again, we do our best to see to it that those who are sitting on the Sanhedrin to try the person have they don't have any emotional blocks in this area. They have the greatest knowledge, of course, but also their emotional disposition is one of compassion, and they really are hoping to try and find some positive. They're not going to shy away from the positive and look to find them guilty. This benefit does not apply when it's a mesis, and we don't have the same desire. But it's got to be mishpat. You have to balance between the two, but it's got to be mishpat. We don't just, you can't put people there that have a desire just to kill people. I mean, obviously, it's got to be through mishpat. But that extra benefit, that the extra element which is designed to try and create greater possibilities that a schus will be discovered, those are not in place in the case of the mesis. Okay? Dayan, however qualified, if he doesn't have any children, so he can't be on the case. In order that they shouldn't have Rachmanis on him. So that's another thing. We're taking steps to prevent the phenomenon of Rachmanis. Then the Rambam gives a little explanation over here. Shah Zari is Alewu Shematin Asa'am Achreya Hevel for cruelty to these people who caused the nation to err, deceived the nation to go after Hevel, after falsehood. That cruelty is rachamim huba'olam, is mercy in the world. The Torah has a different idea of what constitutes cruelty and what constitutes rachmanis. Sometimes the true rachmanis is a form of cruelty. Shenemar, as it says, l'man yoshev Hashem echaron apo v'nosan l'cha rachamim. That as a result of this, as a result of removing the evil doers from our midst, so that will bring about to God's mercy. Interesting. Ram said bechilufa lemesis. But when it comes, for example, machzirin lechov, a machzirin lechov by a regular person, machzirin l'schus, it was based upon the idea of naki v'tzadik altara. So you have two ideas over there. That once a person is found innocent in court, so that's tzadik. Tzadik al-Tara. Mishin is tzadik b'din. Someone was found innocent in the case, in the trial. That's one thing. And Naki is someone who's Naki, who didn't commit the crime. Naki al-Tara. So how does that work over here? For example, if he's found guilty and someone says Yeshu Lumadov Schus, so you don't bring him back. What about Naki al-Tara? That, I think, is more challenging than the other question. And if he was found innocent, so then someone says, Yeshin Mumbal Chov, I can show that he's guilty. So then you do bring him back. That's a matter of Tzadik Al-Tara. Okay, that I think maybe is less challenging. But whatever. All right, so let me be clear why I'm making a distinction between the two ideas in terms of Machzirin. That is, if he was found innocent, tzadik al tarog, the fact that a mesis doesn't get that break, so to speak, does not bother me so much. Because, objectively speaking, in terms of mishpat, one would say that what difference does it make if he was found innocent? But that was a mistake, and somebody can prove it was a mistake, and really he's guilty. So we say, no, once he's found innocent, so he achieves a certain immunity. Okay, so that's a form of mercy, it's an immunity, and it can't be retried. I say that does not apply to a mesis, doesn't bother me, because he's not entitled to that benefit. However, the other idea, that Naki al-Tarak, seems to be a little bit different. Seems to be, because that's true, that's not a benefit, that means you're not supposed to kill an innocent person. So if indeed they found him guilty and someone says that he's really innocent, so he's an innocent person. That seems, at least at first glance, to be more difficult to understand. Well, so what if he's a mesis? But if he's innocent, he's not a mesis. We'd go to the ultimate. All right? Yeah, question. The Rambam at the end gives a little philosophy as to what is real compassion. It seems at first glance that it's disconnected from the subject because it's just reason for it. Tom, so to speak. What does it have to do with the halacha itself? It doesn't seem right that just at this point the Rambam starts to give us a little pep talk, so to speak, as to what exactly is true compassion. I think that it's necessary, in order to understand the halacha, you have to, the Rambam is really giving us more than just that. He's explaining the halacha for us. See, Minchas Chinuch, in Mitzvah Tuf Samach, Shlo Yilmod HaMusos Chus Al HaMesis. But the Musas is the victim, so to speak, the target, is not permitted to argue in favor of the Mesis, to defend him. And Shanimna HaMusas Shlo Lukon Dova Shal Chus Al HaMesis. That the Musas, the victim, is prohibited from arguing for the acquittal of the Mesis. The Afilio Deolos Chus, even if he knows an argument for acquittal. Velo Yilamduhu, Velo Yaskireu Olav. He should not bring it up to people's attention. V'alzen Nemra Velo Sachmo. This is what it means that you can't have mercy. You can't be merciful to him. V'chein Amru Zichron Mavracha, Lo Sumod Olav Schus. Okay. Now the Minchas Chinuch comments on that. Aval im avar v'limeitz chus. So this would be a lo sase then. It's interesting that a person can be a victim, and because of that, he now is under the heading of a lo sase. He's not permitted to be melameitz chus, to argue in his favor. So he takes up the question, but what if he did so, in spite of the fact that he wasn't permitted to do so? And avalim avar v'limeitz chus, hein kan. Behein sham gavi edim, whether it's by the edim too, in maschus nira lebezdin, bevadai matzilin also. If this argument makes sense to the bezdin, so then they save him. Afalpi sheavru belav, even though there was a violation of a law. Rakeim asur mumos chus. Avalam limdu chus, hadayanim ye'ainu b'zeh. There's no question. I only mean to say it like this. That though there's a prohibition against defending him and arguing in his favor, because that's part of the lo sachmol. But all he wants to say is that if somebody violated that, but now Bezdin hears the argument, and according to their understanding, he's not deserving of the death penalty, so then they're permitted to act on that on the basis of it. It's a different point. However, that's not relevant to what the Rambam is talking about. What the Gemara is talking about is after the Gemara Din. All this is relevant to pre the Gemara Din. In the course of the deliberations, there are people who are prohibited from arguing schus. As we learn in an ordinary case, there are those who are prohibited from arguing chol. For example, the Talmidim. Talmidim are only permitted to come forth and state schus. Talmidim are not permitted to argue chol. So in the case of the Mesis, the Musas, the Edim, etc., are not permitted to argue in his favor. All the Minchas Chinuch is saying is that if they did, people were in violation or whatever, nobody realized it, and they stated their argument, and it was too late to stop them. But once the Sanhedrin hears that argument, then it makes sense to them, so they can acquit him on that basis. Fine. What we're talking about over here is where he was convicted. It's after the Gemara Din, and now somebody says, Yesh li lamod schus, I can show you that he's innocent. We don't listen to him. So that has nothing to do with this, okay? Okay, so what's the idea? First glance, when you read the Rambam, it's not clear why he's going into this philosophical explanation of Azorius and so on and so forth. But when you think about it, it makes perfect sense. Because basically, when the idea of Naki Altaro, that if somebody was found guilty, and then somebody says, I can show that he's innocent. So we were machzir then. We listen, and if it makes sense, we'll overturn the there. So, because Naki Altaro, it doesn't mean to say because you can't kill him because he's innocent. We don't know that he's innocent at that point. It means, in terms of pure mishpat, you wouldn't have any obligation to retry the case because he's been found guilty, and Bezdin can go ahead and proceed. You don't have to stop and listen. That's a benefit, though, because of the obligation of the Hitzilu, which is rooted in Rachmanis. This person is entitled to Rachmanis, not just Din. So that operates in terms of Naki Al Tarog, that if there's any possibility that he's Naki, we don't kill him. He remains, he has the shame Naki until he's actually executed. And the same is true, even if he's found innocent, and someone says, Yeshu Lilmodolov We can't try because that's sad. That clearly you can see is a benefit that we're doing for him. A benefit, because in terms of pure mishpat, why? We could retry it and change it. But the answer is no. That the idea that once he's been found innocent, once he has a shame tzaddik, so that's a protection, it becomes usher for Bezdin. Why? Because of the phenomenon of Rachmanis. So that's why it fits in perfectly. That the Rambam is saying that when it comes to a mesis, you can't do Rachmanis. You can't. He's not just saying that it's usher lo sachmo. It's one thing. The pasuk says lo sachmo, that it's usher. But the Rambam is going a little bit beyond in terms of explaining. He's not going beyond the pasuk, I was going to say that. But you see what the Rambam is saying is, it's not just that it's usher, but there is no phenomenon of Rachmanis over here. The phenomenon of Rachmanis doesn't exist over here, because what are you going to do? Are you going to be merachem on him? That's the greatest Avzarius. To the contrary, to treat him in this manner is the greatest Rachmanis. That is to say that here too, Rachmanis plays a role. Rachmanis plays a role, but it plays a role in a different manner. If you're going to say that in terms of Mishpat, you have to have the phenomenon of Mishpat, and you have to have the phenomenon of Rachmanis, so that does apply by emesis. But the only thing is that it takes on a different form, because you can't call this Rachmanis. Or conversely, the other way around, when he's found innocent, and you bring him back for guilt, so you'll say that's Avzarius, but that's really Rachmanis. Here, the factor of Rachmanis operates and brings about the exact opposite conclusion. That's what the Rambam is showing you over here. So these ideas, in terms of Naki Altara, Tzadik, Naki Vitzadik Altara, all these things are Rachmanis. But when it comes to emesis, they operate in the exact opposite way. That's the real Rachmanis. And the other way would be Avzarius. Because here you have this phenomenon that Rachmanis to Emesis is Avzarius to Klal Yisrael. From the Pasuk, he brings the Pasuk. That's why Barach, Laman Yoshev Charon Af Hashem, excuse me, Laman Yoshev Hashem Mecharon Apo, V'nosam L'charachimim. That's how Rachman has to express itself in this particular case.